This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast, everyone, the podcast where we discuss all the disgusting things we love in the horror world. And to help us discuss the disgusting, you know her as the movie critic for Bloody Disgusting, horror movie fanatic and journalist Megan Navarro. Hey, Megan.
Hi.
And you know her from a YouTube channel and website, Real Queen of Horror and Infant Love for the Genre, Zina Dixon.
Hey,
Zina.
Hello.
And I'm John. If you're listening to this on a Wednesday when the episode drops, we hope your week's been filled with all the best kinds of horror. And if not, maybe we can help. We're breaking the usual episode format for another deep dive. This time it is stop motion. Woo-hoo! Which is now available on digital and VOD. It is not currently streaming for free anywhere, so just so you know, small barrier of entry if you have not listened. Well, we'll get into all that anyway. First up, before we get into it, we have our giveaway winner from last week. Zina, would you like to announce?
Sure, okay, well first thank you again to Puncture Wound Pens for this awesome just collaborating with us. We were able to pick three enamel pens that represented us, so just a reminder, so Hell House LLC pen for John, Dolly Dearest pen for Megan, and the pen one for me. Again, so thank you for pen.
It's so fun to say
pen. It is. Thank you to everyone who participated, who shared. And if you haven't checked out Puncture Wound Pens, we highly recommend heading over to puncturewoundpens.com and also following them on social media. So Puncture Wound Pens on Instagram, on Facebook. And so randomly, we selected a winner, and it is at Stevie Not Nix on Instagram. Congratulations. We're going to shoot you a DM, and you know, you guys stay tuned for another giveaway, which may be sooner than you think.
Bum, bum, bum. So ominous. Threatening.
Giveaway winner.
We're going to
get stop. A giveaway. Dun, dun, dun.
Can't stop.
That'd be pretty cool. We should call it a giveaway victim. You know, I don't know.
Oh,
giveaway
there you go.
Victim.
Or victims. All right, with that said, it is deep dive time, baby. Fair warning, during this deep dive into stop motion, there will be nothing but spoilers from here on out. That's the first time I've ever said baby, I think, on this, and I wasn't referring to a baby.
What does it remind me of? It reminds me of something.
Well, the only thing I can think of is Chunt from Hello from the Magic Tavern. He always says, that's right, baby. It doesn't matter. It's a good podcast.
You know what it does? It reminds me of Bruce Campbell, Ash. It's something he would add.
Oh, sure.
In that same delivery. That makes more sense than,
or what about
what? Magic Tavern? What is Magic Tavern?
It's a fantasy improv podcast. It's really funny. And I guess it's getting picked up to be like animated by like Robert Downey Jr.'s production company.
I was was going to say that I thought that was your inner 1920s gangster, John. I don't know. Did they say that?
That would have been like, no, see, no.
They would have been like, it'd been dolls or something. Or broads or something.
Now you're going to have to work dolls in.
I'll figure it. I'll
deep
get
dive
there.
Time. Dolls?
Yeah.
I don't know. You go practice in the mirror and report back. This is fun. I like this John practicing weird voices and slogans. Monday.
Yeah, you know, I'm really at that point in my life where I need to find a good catchphrase. That's been what's missing from my life.
Oh my gosh, so cut to a year from now, it's gonna be viral on TikTok where he's saying some of the most crazy things, you know, like boom goes the dynamite. We need an equivalent of that.
We'll figure it out. I'll talk to my daughter and try and figure out what all the kids are saying now that I don't understand in the least. And I'll just start saying
I'll
start saying Riz a lot, even though I don't quite understand what that's supposed to mean.
You got to string it together with multiple words that make even less sense as you go.
Any practice. Anyway, back to stop motion. If you haven't seen stop motion, I cannot emphasize this enough. Stop listening. Unless you don't plan on seeing it and you're just like, it's fine, whatever. I can just listen to what's going on. But really, it's nothing but spoilers, and it spoils a lot when we start talking about it. So I highly recommend you go and you buy it or you rent it for yourself if you have any interest before listening to this. So that's the last spoiler. As usual, I'm going to give you the countdown. So as you scramble to stop listening,
spoiler warning. It's less spoiler warning.
Yes.
There's going to be a lot of spoilers.
Sorry. Yeah. Last warning. Okay. Tell Alexa to pause and then go buy it or whatever you're doing right now. Alexa, pause the podcast. I don't know. Maybe that worked. That could be funny. Might work for somebody.
Do people listen to podcasts this way?
You can.
Okay.
Yeah.
For everybody else, cool. Sorry, we're not halting the spoilers.
Yeah. Sorry about that. You have to do it on your own. Okay.
Yeah.
So slow countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From here on out, reins are officially in Megan's hands. So Megan, why don't you go ahead and start us off with stop motion?
I don't know. We are in a mood this week. So I guess what a...
Perfect
movie for that. So it released in theaters February 23rd. Obviously, it's now out on VOD and digital, and then it will be arriving on Shudder on May 31st. This was the feature debut by Robert Morgan. He is a BAFTA-winning artist, stop-motion animation artist. This is his feature debut, which I just said. He co-wrote it with Robin King. It stars Aisling Franciosi, Tom York, Suzanne Blake. Wait, no, that's the character's name. Sorry. Tom York, Stella Gronit, who plays Suzanne Blake, and Kaylin Springhall. Robert Morgan first made waves in 2011 with his really trippy 23-ish minute short called Bobby Yeah, which has a lot of characters that look like they could belong in this movie. He also directed the segment D for Deloused in the horror anthology ABCs of Death 2. So, yeah, he's got a heavy background and decided that this was a movie. Like, he'd seen stop motion in movies, but he'd never seen it approached as a vocation in movies. So that was kind of the impetus for this. And then the plot is very simple. It's a woman, young woman named Ella, who... is basically the hands for her legendary stop motion animation. Her mother is a stop motion animator and she's failing in health. So her daughter is her hands. And when her mom's health takes a turn, so too does her daughter's mental state. And, you know, things go real wrong because it's horror and it always goes real wrong. So, yeah. And if you do not know, I feel like people do know who Aisling Franciosi is. She starred in last year's Last Voyage of the Demeter, which John just talked about last week, I think. Yep. And she's also in The Nightingale, which is Jennifer Kent. She directed The Babadook. That was her sophomore feature. And probably from a wider scale beyond horror, most people probably recognize her as Lyanna Stark in the Game of Thrones TV show. Mm. So, yeah. that is kind of like the basic gist of stop motion. What was your expectations kind of going into stop motion? Really, what is your relationship to stop motion animation? I know I've got at least one friend who is utterly creeped out by anything stop motion animation. It's like that uncanny valley, I guess. So I was curious. You know, I know John really liked Mad God, but I was curious what you both felt about stop motion and its relationship to horror and kind of what you were expecting going into this movie.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead,
we both went, but no. So going in, I just knew, you know, because I remember when you spoke about it, Megan, I knew that I wanted to see creepy meat puppets. That was my dream. You know, I wanted to be grossed out. I wanted to have nightmares. You know, I wanted it all. When it comes to stop motion, it's kind of a mix for me. Sometimes it's a hit for me, you know, sometimes it's not, but always, like, it's so cool just seeing how people create it, you know, even when it's not a horror, it's still creepy. So that's really cool.
There you go.
Mad God is a fluke for me when it comes to stop motion. Stop motion generally really bugs me. Kind of, and I think it's very parallel with the shaky head stuff from the Dark Castle days. It's Uncanny Valley, or yeah, like stuff doesn't move this way. My eyes don't like what I'm seeing.
Yeah,
I actually have the same thing with certain televisions.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really strange. Like the higher the frame rate or something like that, or the smoother, like people don't move the way I'm watching right now. I don't like what I'm seeing. Like,
yeah.
And I know that it's purely just the refresh rate, but the frame rate is faster than our eyes are or than our brains do it. So it's like it messes with me, and it just makes me feel uncomfortable for the the weird, hard to explain way. Mad God was different because it pulled me into this world that was pure surreal. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was nothing but visual storytelling that I was just captivated to be like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. This one, and we'll get into it later or through this episode, was actually a little harder for me to watch because it's the mix of reality and stop motion, like stop motion existing in the real world. It almost makes it more difficult to watch at certain points because like my brain is like switching gears when I watch it.
It's like two different frame rates happening at once.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I know this isn't supposed to be happening, but it's happening. And I don't know. I probably blame old Tool music videos from like when I was in high school or something, when they would do or Nine Inch Nail videos or stuff like that, when they would do stuff like that. But generally speaking, I tend to avoid, not actively avoid stop motion, but it wouldn't be my go-to for sure.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not utterly creeped out by it, but there is some uncanny valley happening with the movements, especially. Like one of the earliest things that freaked me out when I was younger was the scene, and I'm sure I've talked about this before, but in Evil Dead 2, where his girlfriend comes out of the grave and is dancing. And I remember watching that for the first time, but way too young, admittedly. But it creeped me out because I'm like, there's something very unnatural. I mean, obviously the sequence is unnatural because she's a dead woman rising from the grave and dancing in the moonlight. But there was something just so like weird about the movement that I was like, this is not normal. She reminds me of Barbie, but from hell. stop motion.
I don't know why. So, like, I guess I never realized that, but you're right. She was dancing in the moonlight. Like, it was just so weird and gross, but yeah, true.
And the creepy, like, fixed grin on her face. Like, it just... Stop motion basically lends itself really well to horror, even though it's not always tied to horror. I was excited about this going in as well. And then I was curious, you know, what was your immediate reaction coming out, like, of having seen this in the context of stop motion and your feelings going into it?
Well, I absolutely love the way, you know, like the whole aesthetic, the whole design of the film, I'm a big fan of, like the lighting. And then even when it comes to the stop motion, it's creepy. So, I mean, I don't know if I'll have nightmares, but I am kind of grossed out, you know, with it. So it's kind of weird because they're such creepy little puppets, right? But I kind of want one, you know, just
Zena needs a meat puppet.
Yes, just to have, but something I wasn't too sure about because I did, I went back and I rewatched like the trailer and everything. And something I noticed is
the
movie does take its time. And I wasn't expecting that, you know, coming out of it, you know, just seeing how there is, you know, there's such a buildup. I feel like it's worth it, but I know that it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea because of that.
Yeah.
What was that? I'm going to call it a fantastic movie because I loved it. Now I can't remember the name of it. It was the Video Nasties movie from last year or 2 years ago where the woman is in charge of...
Oh, Censor.
Censor, thank you. Watching this felt like a combination of Black Swan and Censor.
Yeah.
Where, like, for those who watch it, like Black Swan, it felt very on par emotionally. Like, what was going on, levels of expectation, and pushing yourself and striving to create something new or be the best under the heavy hand of a family member. And Censor, just like Xena was saying, it was like kind of paced a little bit slower. You weren't really quite sure what you were in store for. And really, you know, at the end of it, I just felt sad at the end. Like, there, it's horror without question, but it's definitely horror that felt more than trying to make you scream or even squeamish, you know, like, because the stop motion looks wet and that doesn't make it look better to me, which is intentional, obviously, as we'll talk about, and they talk about in it, is the texture is important. But yeah, it was, I didn't know what to expect. I don't even know if I'd seen the trailer before I bought it. And I was
nice.
All right. Yeah, I was like, all right, let's just see. Like, we're going to talk about it. Let's just watch it and see what happens. So it wasn't what I expected. In nothing but a good way, really. But we'll get into that.
Yeah. Kind of on the same note that you were just talking about, this is pretty simple story-wise. There's not a lot to it. It's a psychological descent movie, which we've seen a lot of in horror. And then we've also seen it in the context of an artist giving their self so fully over to their art that it's going pretty poorly for them. And, you know, you just brought up Censor. You could argue like Possum
a little bit
goes into some of that. So May. Yeah, there was another one that I had thought of that was like, Devil's Candy a little bit as far as the artist goes. So there's like so many different, basically it's a subgenre in and of itself, the psychological descent, especially with an artist. So how do you think that stop motion kind of sets itself apart, or does it, from that? Because, you know, what Xena was saying about this possibly being a little too slow or methodical in pacing, especially in the context of familiar movies that it's bringing to mind, you know, how successful is it?
I mean, I feel like it's very effective. Like, it just kind of feels like it is a visual of her descending, you know, deeper into the madness. And I mean, I feel like we talked about before, we've seen that before with the movies that we listed off. But I think that what makes it, what adds to it is the actor's performance, you know, how believable is it? Because again, kind of like what John said, that's how I felt just about the movie overall. It did make me sad. I felt sad for her, which we'll talk about more, like her life in general before she descended. There was always something there, you know, you could tell that she was unhappy, unsatisfied, which again, we'll dive into more, but I mean, I guess just leaving it at, I feel like the stop motion, kind of added to it. It didn't have to be there, but I think that it added to it, and it was kind of like we were in her world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing, that the stop motion, I was trying to think of the movie without the stop motion, and it would definitely be lacking. The story would have essentially still been the same to a varying degree, but without that visual representation and the parallels of what's happening within the stop motion, what's happening in her own life, you would definitely lose that artist connection and kind of that sense of her being overwhelmed by her own art, and it's taking on a power and a shape of its own through certain methods, I suppose, different motivations. But I was also thinking too, like, all of it felt actually authentic to a certain degree. And we'll talk about like the mom later, I'm sure, probably during like my favorite moments actually. But art is the most amazing and painful thing there is, right? It's like love, really. Like, nothing can make us feel so overwhelmed with happiness and joy and fulfillment, and at the same time make us feel so empty and deprived and insubstantial and like not good enough. Like, anyone who's trying to strive to be their own artist and be better, like,
being
than what
creative
came is brutally painful, because some people just feel it. It's just like, I have to do this, right? I hear that from writers a lot. Like, why do you do it? Like, I have to. Like, I feel like I have to. It's like their calling. It's their calling to a different power. And so not only her being under the thumb of her mom, but also being in a world where people do this. Like, her friends or her circles are doing this too, and they're doing it professionally and things like that, is even more pressure of her feeling outside that world, but trying to be a part of it and trying to be your own person. So it was, I definitely think, as far as an artist's struggles are concerned, this totally worked.
I think it all has to do with basically what we're saying is the approach, because on paper, it's a very similar, familiar story we've seen play out in a variety of different ways in horror, but it's the way that it's approached here where the art form is center stage, because you don't know a whole lot about her past. You get enough early scenes with her mother when her mother's still well enough to be present. She's working for an overbearing mother. We get that part. You get snippets of her relationships with her boyfriends, with frenemies, not a whole lot. I mean, she's pretty isolated. So what sets it apart, I think, is the stop motion animation itself and how it kind of slowly bleeds into her world. And it's very interesting because art is like an expression. An artist is expressing themselves, and how that manifests and how she expresses her art in the horror is interesting. So yeah, I think like this particular story may feel well trodden, but then Robert Morgan makes this feel so completely different and fresh because of the stop motion. So, I mean, I feel like that's a good segue for how this one is effective as far as its horror goes. I assume we all are kind of in agreement that we felt like the horror element was pretty effective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what part of it was effective to you? Like, what had the most impact?
Is that it felt real. So like, kind of like with us talking about art, in some forms, we all have some type of art, right? And kind of like what John said, where it's just like, it's the best feeling in the world when things are going right, you know? And then when they're not, or sometimes, you know, you don't intentionally do it, but you compare yourself to your peers or to other people. So you have that anxiety, you get that feeling, like you feel it in the pit of your stomach. So I felt her when this was in the beginning, Ella, when she showed up and, you know, to meet up with her boyfriend. And is Polly her boyfriend's sister? Or just like a frenemy type of thing?
It's like a close friend slash colleague.
So with Polly, you know, there was just something about her for me that the vibe, you know, wasn't there before we even knew. But with that, and you know, she's showing her art, instead of her saying, oh, I don't want to see that, or she's like, you know, oh, you know, it's great. I don't think how she was feeling had anything to do with Polly. It was just more of, I should be working on my own stuff. And I feel like I've been there before. I've been there before where I was working on other people's projects. And it's just like, you know, you want to invest in yourself. You want to go hard for yourself. But sometimes your schedule or your circumstances doesn't always allow you to do that. So again, I feel like that's real horror in itself. But then when you add in the stop motion elements, and especially we'll go into more details, but you know, she hears a knock at the door, pounding at the door. You look at the door. There's like a bloody eyeball, you know? So there's like real real scares in there, real creepiness that, like, when it comes to horror movies, stuff that you expect, but then stuff for me that I did not expect, where it's just like, ooh, that's like real life horror, you know?
So for you, it started with the characters on page and the actors performing them to make this world plausible first before, like, the actual horror element started layering in.
I like the fact that even though they do have, like, obviously there's stop motion, it didn't feel like they were depending on that. You know, I feel like that was like a bonus for them, you know, even though it's very enjoyable for me. I love seeing it. Would I have loved to see more? Yeah. Of course, but it was still like an enjoyable watch for me.
I looked it up too. Polly is Tom's
sister. All right. I wasn't too sure.
Oddly enough, she's not her credits. She isn't credited on Wikipedia though.
Oh, weird.
Like, the actress's name actually isn't listed. It's weird.
Oh, well, I am. Wikipedia's.
Yeah. Not, but it's like the they have reliable. Lesser people listed. It's like she's a fairly important
because
character.
It's whoever is like writing it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever is important to them, I guess.
But yeah, I think it started with how I viewed the relationship of the mom and the daughter, and Ella and Susan, and it kind of had to start there for me. Like, there had to have been something that wasn't just the relationship between Carrie and her mom. Mm-hmm. It couldn't just be I'm the worst. Because I don't think of her mom as being the worst. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But it, like what was Zena, it starts with the plausibility. There has to be some level of authenticity without stretching credulity, without adding drama without reason. The manufactured drama or anything like that. This is purely, it starts as a combination of familial struggles to artistic struggles to kind of morphing the two together through the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that those two struggles exist at the beginning are not how they exist at the end. They've kind of become their own things because of each other.
Yeah.
And I think that was a lot of it. I think a lot of it was me watching Ella's struggles as much as it was fantastic sound design, and the puppets are wholly unnerving. I would definitely not want one in my office. That's not reverse psychology. I do not want one in my office. I will throw it in the fire. It's again, well, part of stop motion too is like they're not supposed to even really look real, right? Like, I don't think I've ever seen a stop motion movie where the thing was supposed to look like a real person. It was supposed to look like a doll. It's always supposed to look like a doll, or in this case, a very slick, very moist doll, with strange looking orifices, I suppose. I think at the end of the day, that good story that's just kind of rooted in the artist's struggle, and then you build into it the stop motion, and you show us something that we really haven't seen before in the movie. It just highlights the rest of it. But yeah. But neither could have existed successfully, in my opinion, on their own. If it was just a stop motion, it'd been like, okay, here's another stop motion. If it was just a movie, it'd be like, okay, this is fine. But together they work.
Before we talk about the puppets, you mentioned, you know, you don't think the mom is evil, which is an interesting point because we don't see a whole lot of interactions with Ella and her mother and with Ella and the people around her. Because we kind of meet her at a dark place to begin with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, her mom's this legend in the stop motion animation field. She's very strict, but it's in service of a very highly disciplined art form. I mean, like, to do a minute of stop motion animation requires, I don't even know what the stats are, but it's a crazy amount of shots and time and precision. You know, like, I actually spoke with Ashling about this movie, and she had talked about how, like, he kind of is painful to sit after a while because you're just hunched over and you have to, like, very tiny movements. And then shot, tiny movement, shot. So it's a huge ordeal. But we don't know if these people are bad. We just see her side, and she's already in a dark place that proceeds to get darker and darker. So I was hoping, you know, John, unpack that. Why do you not believe Mom is evil?
Mostly because, to me, I see nothing but pain in the mom's character. This is a woman who is the height of her craft, who we hear later in the movie, people talk about how they studied her mom's work in school. Like, she is clearly a dominant figure, either within this field or within these circles that she exists in. Regardless, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how small the circle is. If you're a dominant figure in it, there's a weight on you. And the fact that she can no longer perform this craft, she's not willingly letting her daughter do this for her. She is working with her daughter because arthritis does not allow her to do it anymore. And it's a combination of, obviously, like, the physical limitations and frustrations of not being able to bring to life the vision in her head. She has to rely on someone else to do it, and they're not doing it right. And while, yes, that it sounds super cruel when you watch it and she's yelling at her, like, 3 millimeters, what's wrong with you? Like, right. Something like that. That's her yelling at herself because she is so frustrated that this is her world now and it will not get better. Like, the arthritis is not going to go away. And her daughter is being an obedient daughter, but she doesn't want to be there. She's not invested like her mom is. And that's added frustration for the mom, who clearly does not have the communication skills to explain any of this to her daughter. But that's what I see. And is she being shitty? Absolutely. Yeah, she is. She could use her words a lot better. But to me, like, her story is the saddest part of it. At least, Ella's trumps it. But
yeah.
At least initially, her story is so sad because, one, she's trapped in this body that doesn't work. And then she has a stroke on top of it. And then who knows whatever torment she's going through, like in a hospital bed when her daughter doesn't even want to visit and she gets her own place so she can do her own art and be her own person. So then I can't even imagine if this was supposed to be like her magnum opus that will never be finished because her daughter doesn't want anything to do with it. Like, it's brutal. And I think that it's conveyed really well just through the combination of impatience as much as anything else.
She also, you know, didn't treat her daughter as a daughter and treated her as an employee.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, and her daughter's, that's what starts this. Like, she's in a dark place because she has no identity of her own. She's in her mom's shadow, and mom.
And I'm guessing mom probably learned to do this thing a lot the same way. Right. Like, the analogy I always like to compare with people is like Gordon Ramsay. Everyone always talks about how, oh, my God, he yells so much. He's so mean, everything else like that. It's like, well, first of all, watch a video of him just cooking by himself. And he is the happiest person in the world. He clearly loves what he does. But he learned from a guy named Marco Pierre White, who was the first English chef to get 3 Michelin stars. Marco Pierre White was so cruel. He almost got Gordon Ramsay to quit. Like, when he was interning. So by comparison, Gordon Ramsay's not mean. Like, he's actually toned it down from what he learned from, but that's how he learned it too, was by someone yelling at him. So I'm sure that the mom is literally doing how she learned it, and she's probably actually softer because she's still trying to talk to her daughter, calling her poppet instead of puppet, but that's probably intentional.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of feel the opposite. You know, I feel like her mom was terrible and selfish. And I think,
oh, totally.
Yeah. I think that, you know, not that anyone is responsible for your happiness, but, like, I feel like her mother is probably the reason why she's the way that she is, because you have this woman. So her mom, she was just so well known, right? And she wants to fit. She's pretty much on her deathbed, on her last leg. And instead of wanting to spend time with your daughter, you want to put out your last project because it's that important. Okay, fine. Some people are just like that. If you really do want to put out a project, cool. But it's like, you know that your daughter has a desire to do something. you know? So why not?
Your legacy could be.
Your legacy could be, if you are thinking that way, even though it's still selfish, but sometimes that's just how people are. Your legacy could be through your daughter, you know, uplift her, encourage her to do that. And then even like, understand, like, we've all had people in our lives who just, they don't really know how to communicate sometimes. But, you know, sometimes it's just kind of like, all right, you're still going to work with this person or you're still going to do whatever. And I understand that's her mother. But at the end of the day, it's like she was already in a toxic environment and she probably already had a life where it was like very, there was already like a lot of tension. And she was probably, I'm trying to think of the right word, but pretty much her mom had certain things that she wanted her daughter to accomplish, but it just seemed like, oh, but you can't get too higher than me. Or, you know what I mean? It just felt like she was in a way trying to compete with her daughter, minus actually having her daughter in it. And I didn't understand that. And I felt for her. And it seemed like Ella was trying to have a normal relationship with her mom, trying to be helpful. And obviously she didn't want to be there. I do not blame her for not wanting to be there. But sometimes when you're used to being in a toxic situation, you don't know how to speak up for yourself. So that's what I got from her. And not saying, hey, maybe she should have did therapy. I don't know. You know, I don't know what could have helped Ella at that point. I think maybe if she was if she wasn't in a toxic environment where maybe her mother wasn't talking to her the way that she was. And again, like if her mom really did want to, you know, work on this last project, there's nothing wrong with that, but she's a legend. So because of that, maybe have somebody else there to help you and then you can do something else with your daughter. But I'm not, you know, faulting the movie. This is what I'm seeing as the viewer, and maybe I'm going too deep, but that's just the vibe that I picked up on.
I think that
could have also been Ella's choice.
It could have been her choice.
Because Ella's trying to become a stop-motion animator, maybe even surpassing her mom. So maybe it's Ella's choice to be like, no, I'll do this.
Right.
I'll work with you so I can improve my skills to be better than you.
Mm-hmm.
Like that she's willfully put herself in that situation because, she could. They could potentially get a carer or something. I have no idea how the healthcare system works over in England as far as those things are concerned. I'm sure it's not easy. But it's also mutually beneficial for her to be a part of that and learn from the best, even if the best is like, if you watch like The Bear, you know, like again, back to chefs.
Wow, that show stresses me out.
Any artist. Like if it's like the whole like never meet your heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I learned that in grad school, meeting certain writers and being like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I really liked what you wrote and you are a terrible human being. Mm-hmm. You're paid to be here and you're still being terrible to people. Like what is going on? So there's that too. Like it's just a part of it. Like sometimes you just learn from the terrible people and take what they can give you and then move on.
The movie doesn't give you a whole lot. I mean, it gives you enough to think about it and fill in your blanks and kind of what you think is happening as far as the back history goes. But what it does make clear is that Ella has no support system.
Mm.
So you get this key scene with her mother at the beginning, both kind of to set up the stop motion animation and then, you know, her relationship with her mother. And then her mother takes a turn where she's in the hospital pretty quickly after and mostly out of the picture from there. So the other relationships that Ella has, because this takes up so much of her time that she doesn't really have a life. So she has her boyfriend, Tom, and through Tom, his friends and sister's friends. And there's a little bit of like the boyfriend seems nice, but a little bit obtuse. And there's a key scene later in the movie where she's losing her mind because she's finally like getting a job and trying to put herself out there and sees that Polly has taken some ideas. So I think but more than some, but the key takeaway is not only is this scene kind of pivotal to her already fragile mental state, but she has nobody really. She has Tom, and Tom is only somewhat effective, but I don't know if I'm being too harsh on poor Tom there.
I don't think so. I did not like Tom. So I felt like he was a terrible boyfriend, a terrible support system. And I understand sometimes we all have our own life going on, but it's like you are dating her. And obviously you do know that she comes with her issues, but it seemed like he quote unquote wanted her to be normal, wanted her to get a normal job. Why can't you be successful like my sister? I mean, I know he didn't say that, but there was a scene which I'm sure we'll touch on. Some stuff goes down, and then pretty much what he says to her is just like harsh, and he wants her to get rid of, which I get in a way, but can you not speak to her? Like, clearly she is fragile, you know? So, but yeah, sorry if I went down a rabbit hole.
No, you did not.
Yeah, Tom's selfish for sure. Like for early on, like keeping her overnight when she knows she's not going to get any sleep and she has to wake up early and everything else. And I get it too. Like, I don't remember how long they'd been dating or been together, but it's like, you, when you're with your significant other, you want to spend time with them. And if they never stay overnight, you're like, oh, come on. Like, we're comfortable. It's warm. We're having fun. Like, we're happy. Let's keep doing this.
Yeah.
And not understanding the sacrifice that some people need to make or have to make or want to make for their art. And I was thinking about this too, though, is there's also a certain level of self-isolation going on with Ella. Mm-hmm. Like, Polly, to her credit, depending on how you want to interpret the scene, I suppose, but I think later on we get a hint that it is real. When Polly offers her the job to work in the animation studio, Ella, kind of under the influence of LSD, not quite sure about that scene, tells her she'd rather be dead than work with her, like, at a corporate, like, place. And then she ends up working there anyway. But, like, we're seeing inside, like, her true self, right? Mm-hmm. Like, her initial reaction is, oh, my God, I'd rather be dead than do this crap you make. Like, putting herself on a pedestal, maybe even becoming her mom in that moment. Like, I don't need you. I don't need that paycheck, when she desperately does. But she's also self-isolating herself. She goes to the party and she looks around at people and it's kind of like, eh. It's like, well, you didn't have to go to the party.
Yeah.
Like, if you didn't want to be there, as a master of not going to social functions myself and leaving without saying goodbye, I know you don't have to go. You're an adult. Like, and especially if you don't want to be around those people. And it's really disingenuous, and it feels disingenuous when you're around people who are clearly don't want to be somewhere.
Right.
And you're like, why are you even here? Like, you're upset anyway. And maybe it was just to be with her boyfriend. I don't know. Or have some social
also,
interaction.
Also, I think she was stunted. Her growth was stunted socially and all around. So I think that's like she doesn't know how to reach out. And that's an attempt of her to reach out.
That's what I thought.
And the self-isolation thing is definitely happening. And it manifests in many ways, which we're about to get into. But before we get into the puppets, we have to get into the girl.
Yeah.
Which shows up as a neighbor. Like, she's just her, the character's name is literally the girl. It's played by Kaylin Springall, or little girl. She's the neighbor that shows up, and she's clearly like, there's no surprises that this woman is just, or this little girl is just a figment of her persona, her imagination, what have you. And I don't think the movie wants that to be some kind of surprise, but I don't know how you felt about the inclusion of the girl.
Right away, I knew that the little girl wasn't real. I think it's because of the previous movies that we've watched before, and we knew that she was on this path. So I knew that already. Then that scene towards the end where she strangles her, I was just like waiting for her to blink. And then when she just appeared near her, I was just like, I knew it, you know, type of thing.
Got that out of your system.
That was crazy.
Yeah. I don't think I realized it immediately, but I at least had my suspicions early on, because I'm like, one, she's talking not like a little kid. She's being way too aggressively coy about everything. Like, I'll tell you a story, but I'm only going to tell you a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, that could be something. Some like only child being selfish, doesn't have friends, maybe. But then, like, as soon as you got to the roadkill, well, not roadkill, but the dead animal, is like, oh, okay. Well, even if you're a sociopath, you're not provoking someone else to make their art out of that at that age without some sinister, like, motivations. And there is no motivation behind that beyond making the story. So I was like, yeah, it's, she's probably made up, but that's okay. Like, it's, it actually didn't change anything for me, whether she was made up or real.
No, except probably to illuminate more of her headspace, because I feel like it's very interesting that she is kind of manifesting a child and not somebody her age. Says a lot about her psychology and her upbringing.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's also the concept of, like, that was, because I thought that the little girl was actually supposed to be her when she was little.
That's what I thought.
So maybe that was the last time she had her own stories. Mm-hmm. So, like, she's, whenever the girl's not around, if the girl's not telling her the story, she doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And it's only through the little girl. So that could have even been a representation of her own imagination was beaten out of her by her mom. Like, her mom's ideas were all that was important.
Just snuffed out all the creative. Mm-hmm. Well,
So, like, all the potential she had to make these original stories is gone. And they only exist within that little girl that's no longer around.
That's exactly what I thought. And it makes me just very sad for her, because it seemed like, you know, when you're a creative, you need an outlet. You need some type of outlet for your personal self. And it just seemed like she didn't have that. So she just came up with this person.
Repressed.
Yeah. Like, just popped up.
Repression and horror.
So, but yeah, I think that's a really cool setup. But I mean, I don't know if we're like really reaching, and someone's probably listening like, what? That's not it, you know?
Well, but that's the beauty of it too, right? Because we're not having our hands held by any of this. Someone's going to watch this and be like, I don't get it. This sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they've never felt it. They've never felt any of the pain of trying to create something and fail or be under the thumb of someone else. But again, that's the beauty of horror. It's and movies like this that have those levels. You can totally watch it surface level, just like X. You can totally watch it surface level, and it's a good movie. Or you can play. You can, all those unanswered questions, what do you think they mean? And they mean whatever you want them to mean at the end of the day. Like, they mean what the filmmaker meant them to mean, but people always, it's going to be your story at the end of the day.
Right. Now we get to talk about the stop motion, because that is such a crucial component here. And I wanted to share, you know, because I also interviewed Robert Morgan about this movie, and the idea or the design for these little meat puppets. It starts with mortician's wax. So they're made of mortician's wax, which has morbid connotations to it. And then you go to steak and meat. So you just start from the thought of, what does a meat and mortician's wax girl look like? And it was coated with KY, which was definitely unpleasant for Ashlyn to work with. And the other thing that I thought was very fascinating, well, a few things. The Ashman, there's the figure of the Ashman. That was not a puppet. That was a real costume that they put on top of an actor, James Swanton.
And they filmed that stop motion?
No, he's an actor.
They
may have played with... Yeah, so like the meat girl is a meat girl. There are, but like the Ash Man, that's
very cool.
That's a person. That's an actor.
Oh God, I got to rewatch that now.
I know. And then I just, more quotes from Morgan, because this is stop motion that he is compositing or grafting into a live action movie. So it was a very technical process. So he said, it's very boring and requires a lot of planning. It would take me a while to explain in detail, but basically it was on a set. We shot the live action segments first. Then there was a replica of that set built in the same studio, but it was raised off the ground because you can't animate on the floor. You have to have trap doors. Otherwise, it's impossible. So we had to build a replica of the set, but raise off the floor with a trap door so the animators could come out, animate, and go back under the trap door again. Then those things were kind of glued together by the VFX team, who would then composite it all together. So you've got to recreate the lighting, the camera angle, everything exactly the same. The dressing had to be exactly the same on both sets, and it had to match perfectly. It's a very long process of communicating with all the teams and storyboarding it very carefully and having great people to execute it. It was a big challenge, very time consuming and difficult.
Very cool. Wow.
That's a passion project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, stop motion is, yes.
I can't even imagine.
So, like, you don't think about it because you're just so absorbed into Ella's story and just how visually cool and freaky these puppets looked. But the Ashman is not a puppet. The little girl is a puppet, but they had to have a separate identical miniature set for this.
Wow.
That they're, you know, right? So stop motion. Bravo. And I don't know if this like deepens the appreciation for it because mm-hmm. it's so psychologically warped or what.
It definitely deepens my appreciation for the filmmakers.
Yeah.
Like you have to believe in what you're mm-hmm. making to put yourself through that when there's easier ways to do it.
And I don't know. Well, I mean, that's the nature of stop motion. And I don't know that anybody could have made it a movie like this other than somebody like who has their entire identity wrapped up in it as an artist, mm-hmm. you know? So the stop motion, obviously, very complicated, very painstaking process that they had to do. But there was another key component that I think really set this over the top, and that is the sound. Mm-hmm. The sound. There's so much squelching in this movie.
Yeah, so
it is so gross. So the sound designer is Ben Baird. It was his idea to install a slight squeaking of the armature. So normally there's, you know, when you've got like a little metal wire frame that you're putting the clay on top mm-hmm. of when you're sculpting in general or making figures, right? So they don't really make noise, but it was Ben Baird's idea to add squeaking. And Morgan said that you can see when you watch the film that shows up in scenes where it shouldn't be, this armature squeaking. So they're using this to kind of unsettle throughout. It was one of those things where he suggested that. It's not realistic because armatures don't make that noise, but it was just something he came up with. Like, that's a brilliant idea. It became an important thing, actually, in the sound design of the film. Just the squelchiness, the visceralness of it, and also the score. Lola De La Motta's score is incredibly incredibly organic and squelchy and textured and troubling. So, yeah, it wasn't just these mortician wax and meat and KY jelly puppets, but the crazy squelching sounds and squeaking noises where they shouldn't be, that's like her further erosion of her mental state. So I don't know if you were as smitten with the squelching as I was.
It's just a grotesque love story. Like they just show so much dedication with this and every, like, down to like the details, you know? And I love that because people often do forget about certain little sounds, and this, it definitely added to it.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I agree.
I'm rarely smitten by squelching, so, but I appreciate it.
Why are you not? You want to be a dead guy in a movie. You should get on, get down with the
squelching. Dead guys don't move. They don't squelch.
Yeah, maybe.
But, I mean, you should be so smitten that you'll be still. There's going to be squelching.
But what if,
right?
You know, during your autopsy.
They can add it in post.
Like, you know, they have to add those sounds during the autopsy, right?
The autopsy of John Grills. Perfect.
Is that where you draw the line? You just want to lay there. Well, you can still lay there and have an autopsy.
I don't know. I rewatched the autopsy of Jane Doe the other day again, and I don't think I could have done what that actress did.
No, that was incredible what she did. No, I think John would break character. He would break dead boy character
oh,
the
constantly.
Moment.
Is he blinking?
Is he eating a sandwich on me?
He's just looking around. What the hell? He didn't even put his contacts in.
There you go. But back to the movie. What are your favorite standout moments?
Okay.
I think the end for me.
We'll get to the ending.
Yeah. And yeah, we'll get to it. So I'll just say the end.
The end. And then Xena, and then we'll discuss the ending.
I have two. So the first part is when Ella, she's taking a shower. Not that part, but when she's just like, she starts digging into her leg and it's like wax.
The WAF.
Yeah, and it's just like, I'm not going to lie. Like, wouldn't you be curious? And I feel like if that was happening to me, I would just keep on doing it. You know, it's kind of like having that mosquito bite that you have to scratch.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like peeling off of sunburn, like the skin off of sunburn. Yeah, I'd like go down
that.
To the bone.
Just like that. Yeah. So, and then, yeah, that part, because it was like unexpected and it was just kind of like, ew. But then another part that made me cringe, which I had to just keep watching. And it's when Ella just starts digging in her leg. Like, she just really going in there. And so, like, I don't know about you guys, but I was always getting injured as a kid for some reason. And I remember one time I accidentally, like, broke, like, a glass, right? And so my mom had to take the piece of glass out of my foot. And it was just, like, it was painful. It was so painful. Like, owie, right? But the way this woman, she, like, ripped off a piece of a muscle. Like, it was so gross. But again, like I said, I could not stop watching.
Yes. Okay. The ending, because the ending is a very bloody finale. Yeah. John.
Yes. All that. And I think, again, it's kind of like, and maybe again, this is why I liked it, is kind of like this huge climax, like the end of Censor or Black Swan, where the insanity or the mental instability or whatever you want to say of the main character, like sticking with a very artistic, crescendos like so much more than it even been like foreshadowed. That like, yeah, you knew she was losing it, but then you're like, oh, okay. All right. I thought someone was going to die. Sure.
Right.
Did I think they were going to get made into puppets? No, I did not. You know, and then the actual visual symbolism of everything at the end of her watching the video and her opening the box that at one point she had crawled out of when she was tripping, or she thought she was tripping on LSD and all that. It was just like, I really like it when a slow burn just ends bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, just, go for it. Like, you want to show that breakdown? Then break down. Like, let's do it. Like, don't hold back. Go for it. And they did.
They did. Mm-hmm. Xena.
Oh.
After the leg, how did this compare?
I feel like the ending is so satisfying. And I know that may sound weird outside of like the bloody part. With the bloody part, it was just very unexpected. Like John said, I knew that there was someone going to die, you know, but the way it happened, like the camera with the tripod, someone got beat to death with it, you know?
That pushed into her neck.
Whoa. Yeah. That was insane. Yeah. So there's that, but it's like, then, you know, we I think we all agree that we felt like Ella's life was just sad, but finally, even though she had the ending that she did, she finally seemed like she was at peace, even though, you know, down to her last breath, because she was doing what she loves. And not that I'm like, yeah, that's me, but that's crazy. No.
Don't be Ella. No. We got to get you a support system. No.
But yeah, but you know, sometimes when you finally complete something and you feel real good about it, so you could take that, you know, you could take that nap, you could take that break type of thing. And
she finished her masterpiece.
She finished
her
masterpiece.
Crawl into your satin line box.
Yeah, that was wild. That box did look kind of comfortable. I would never, but it looks comfortable.
It is all of what you said and more. Very satisfying finale for her. But it was one of those things where we've seen enough movies, like even Black Swan, to know that this is an inevitable conclusion. We kind of, there's no real surprises, and yet it's the way that he does it. It's a journey movie, I think, for me. Because I think a lot of times we see a lot of complaints. It's like, well, that, I saw that coming. That was, I saw the twist. Well, a lot of movies don't have twists, you know, like a lot of movies are not there to like completely knock you off your feet and surprise. And I don't think, like, there's no twist really here. Maybe the little girl, but I think that there's enough foreshadowing and advanced. So what are your thoughts on horror and whether it has to surprise you to be valid or good?
I don't feel like it needs to surprise you with certain things, because there were certain things that we even spoke about that we knew was coming. kind of everything that you just said, but it's kind of how it was revealed to us. It's kind of, it's like a whole checklist going on. It's the sound, it's the performances, you know what I mean? It's the visuals, it's like the death scene. Like, I didn't know that they were going to get that violent. It didn't give me that vibe. So that was a surprise for me, but I don't feel like you have to know in order for it to be right. Like, oh yeah, this is great type of thing.
I mean, horror is what you make of it, right? Like, if the filmmaker wants to do a full M. Night twist, whatever, however you want to look at it, cool. Or Hitchcockian or whatever, however you want to look at it. But just because something has a twist doesn't make it horror. And just because it doesn't have a twist doesn't make it not horror. Like, it's... I don't know. I think people get too excited to be in the know, mm-hmm.
and to act like be like, ahead of the story.
Yeah, like some people watch movies and they just predict. Mm-hmm. I've sat through movies where people the whole time are like, "Oh, watch this. This is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen." Yeah. Like, can you enjoy a movie? Like, I don't think you can enjoy a movie if you sit there doing that all the time. Like, that sounds brutally painful. Just so you can tell to no one, I saw it coming. Okay. It's like people saying they saw the end of Fight Club coming. First of all, no, you didn't. And second of all, like, why? Why is that a feather in your cap? Did you put that on your resume?
I guess they got to feel like, good, you know? Like, I'm witty.
I personally think horror is way more enjoyable if you don't even go in thinking there's going to be a twist. Because then you can just enjoy it and not wait for it. There isn't that, you don't need that anticipation. You can just watch the story. And then if there's a twist, you can be like, oh, nice.
Right.
Yeah. Or, oh, I didn't like it, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think if you go into it thinking that, I think it just detracts for me. And yeah. I've done it to myself before, too. Like, we all do, but I try not to.
Yeah. I think that's...
And I do think there is a...
Oh, sorry. No, I was just going to say, I think that's why I stopped watching trailers, you know, because sometimes...
Yeah, totally.
You see things when then you want to, you know, dissect it. At least that's what I do, you know? Just do, like, a whole breakdown.
You wait for that scene.
Yeah, so...
Oh, yeah, that may or may never come.
And
yeah.
I've seen some trailers where you literally watch it and you're like, I know everything that's about to happen. Like, for whatever reason, the way it's edited, it's like you're seeing clear moments from specific scenes almost in line. I saw one before I watched Immaculate. I can't remember what the hell it was about. I watched the trailer. Long Legs. Mm. I have no idea what that movie is about. And I've seen the trailer twice now. I'm like, I don't get it. I watched the full-length trailer. I have no concept of what the actual plot is, and I appreciate that.
Love that.
Because then I'm not anticipating anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think there is a world where stop motion could have felt very, like, derivative. Mm-hmm. You know, there is such a thing as, there's no surprises, but we've also seen this exact thing, like, 20 billion mm-hmm. times. But I don't think that that's the case here because of the way that he approaches it. There's a very, like, hyper-specificity to this world and the techniques involved that makes this feel different. Like, it takes a tired story and makes it refreshing. Do you have any other thoughts or maybe topics we didn't broach that we definitely need to?
Can we just touch on Polly real quick? Can I just say something about Polly?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know that Ella, she was, you know, she had LSD when she accepted the job type of thing, right? But I do feel that Polly kind of lied to her about, like, the job, you know, because when she got there, and I understand you're new and sometimes you got to start at the bottom, but you know what she does, you know, her talent. And then you kind of have her doing, like, a side thing. And then you stole her stuff, like, blatantly stole her stuff. And then I didn't really do that. I wanted to fight her. I wanted to jump through the screen and fight her. And you know, I was actually rooting for Ella when she destroyed their set, and I didn't care, you know, at that point. But that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, boo Polly. Agreed.
Boo the whole industry, because she kind of said it loudly in front of the other guy, too, and the other guy who seemed to be in charge of the set didn't care where they'd gotten the ideas from. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what advertising agency is using stop motion in the first place? And second of all, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then on a positive note, I will say this. I do feel like this movie, I feel like it deserves everyone's attention. You know, even I already felt that way. But then even with some of the stuff that you told us, like behind the scenes, Megan, like all the effort that that went into it. And I know for me, I didn't get a chance to see it in theaters because it wasn't playing anywhere near me. And they had like a limited release. And I don't understand why, because I would have loved to have seen it on the big screen.
Yeah. Oh, man, the squelching on the big screen and surround sound. Yeah.
So are we saying it's Dark Trio approved?
I believe it is. Yeah.
I think that's three yeses.
Woo-woo!
So if you haven't seen Stop Motion, now that we've spoiled a large portion of the movie, go watch the movie. I don't think it'll take anything away from it. I think especially hearing like the behind the scenes, I mean, it will take some stuff away from it, but hearing some of the behind the scenes stuff too, I think it'll just add to appreciation. And now I got to go back and check out the Ashman again too for myself. So that's the Bloody Disgusting podcast for this week, everyone. If you'd like to read more from Megan, you can check out her reviews at bloodydisgusting.com and on Twitter at HauntedMeg. Xena can be found on our own website, realqueenofhorror.com, and the YouTube channel of the same name, or at Lovely Xena on Twitter. And you can hear me on my weekly Horror Nation podcast, Creepy, where we're back at Creepaway Camp for the whole month of April.
Woo-hoo!
Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and feel free to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, at BeDisgustingPod, or drop us an email at BeDisgustingPodcast@gmail.com. So for this week, I'm John.
I'm Megan.
I'm Xena.
Grab some popcorn, cozy up on the couch, watch something you love, just make sure it's something squelching.
Yeah.